Kwaba Ekabo Oshambo, and hello again, Bankless Africa.
It's the end of another week, which means it's time for Sats and Gwe, where we bring you weekly updates and recaps of some of the most significant crypto and Web3 headlines about the African continent and sometimes about the globe. I am Miss Purple.
And this is again Neki.
Your favorite decentralized reporters from Africa.
Awesome. Now we take another look at how the currencies are doing for the week. And to be honest, they aren't doing so bad. Bitcoin is still pushing strong, maintaining the 28K mark, currently sitting at $28,021.76, slightly down from what it was a week ago at $28,362.04. Ethereum is still pushing strong, at least holding the fort at the $1,800 mark, sitting comfortably at $1,868.54. Up from what it was last week at $1,818.42. Optimism has remained relatively unchanged, currently sitting at $2.27, slightly down from its value last week at $2.30. The MATIC token by Polygon currently sits at $1.11, very marginally down from what it was last week at $1.12. And the Bank token currently sits at $0.0069, slightly down from what it was last week at $0.0071.
Moving into our national currencies, we're going to start off first with the Ghanaian cedi, which is currently at 10.82 cedi to the dollar, up by 7.12% from last week's 11.65 cedi to the dollar. The Nigerian naira is at 465 naira to the dollar, down by 0.108% from last week's 464.50 naira to the dollar. The Lesotho Luti and South African rand are at 18.07 rand to the dollar, down by 1.57% from last week's 17.79 Luti and rand to the dollar. The Kenyan shilling is at 131.08 shillings to the dollar, up by 1.07% from last week's 132.5 shillings to the dollar. And last but certainly never the least, the Central African CFA franc is at 596.5 franc to the dollar, up by 0.95% from last week's 602.24 franc to the dollar. And with that, we're going to give you a quick recap of some of our favorite headlines from last week. My one that particularly piqued my interest was that South Africa's CBDC is set to explore interoperability and DAO principles, which I think that's quite a good place to start. So we'll see where they go with that. If you would like to listen to more on Project Khoha, which is South Africa's CBDC project, be sure to listen to Sats and Gwe's episode from last week.
And a headline which particularly piqued my interest from last week was the headline about Zimbabwe, where a blockchain-based eLivestock Global is set to expand livestock traceability systems across Africa post its pre-seed funding. And that brings us to a wrap-up of our headlines from last week. We're moving on to our headlines for this week. And we're beginning in Nigeria, where foreign investment in Nigeria declines due to dollar shortage and lack of crypto regulation.
According to the National Bureau of Statistics, that is the NBS, Nigeria, which is the largest economy in Africa, experienced a decline in foreign direct investment, that is FDI. It experienced this decline by about 33% last year due to a severe shortage of dollars. The FDI declined to $468 million in 2022 from 2021's $698 million and has since decreased by about 90% since its peak of $4.7 billion in 2008. This decline is said to be attributed to the lack of crypto regulation in the country. Despite the exponential growth of crypto adoption, Nigeria ranks 8th in the world in crypto adoption and usage rate among 154 countries, but the use of cryptocurrency is yet to go mainstream. According to local data analyst and crypto enthusiast Obina Ozoeje, the low investment rate is partly due to the ban on financial institutions from servicing crypto exchanges. Olumide Adesina, who is a certified investment trader, reacted to the NBS report by saying that no state in Nigeria has taken the initiative to attract foreign investors in fintech, entertainment, or even crypto. despite the Nigerian population's love for all these sectors. The Lagos state governor, Babajide Sanwo-Olu, had earlier announced proposals for crypto adoption in the state, including establishing a dedicated sandbox regulatory framework for cryptocurrency, creating a crypto-focused innovation hub, and providing incentives for businesses to accept crypto payments. All this is to say, FDI is not doing well in Nigeria, and a lot of people seem to think that it has to do with, you know, lack of crypto education or, you know, even regulation and everything along those lines. I'm not 100% certain. I think it's deeper than that. I think perhaps, you know, the lack of crypto regulation is just part of it, but I think it goes beyond just it being crypto. I don't think we can attribute a whole country's FDI decline just strictly on crypto when, you know, it's still not as mainstream as it possibly could be. But hey, I could be wrong. I'm, of course, not based in Nigeria, and I am obviously not a financial advisor. But in my personal opinion, I think, you know, crypto is just one of the signs of a lot of things that perhaps need a lot more work from now going forward. On to our next headline. Still in Nigeria, Paxful's shutdown leaves the Nigerian crypto community uncertain.
Now, I'm going to be really honest. When I first heard about this, it actually, you know, rattled me a little bit, because Paxful, I did not see it coming. They haven't exactly released an official statement as to what might have happened or as to why they're shutting down, but it's still a bit of a blow. Now, for people who do not know Paxful, Paxful is a peer-to-peer cryptocurrency marketplace. And now its decision to shut down its operations has caused uncertainty among its worldwide user base. Paxful, for instance, has at least 1.5 million users in Nigeria as of, well, this month. Now, in Nigeria, this platform, Paxful, has helped pioneer the use of peer-to-peer technology, further expanding the crypto industry. The shutdown has affected many Nigerian crypto traders, with even one person describing it as, and I quote, the death of a loved one. Now, the founder and CEO of Paxful, Ray Youssef, cited, and I quote, key staff departures and regulatory challenges as reasons for the decision, which has left some community members concerned about the possibility of getting their funds back. The CEO made it clear that users have full access to their funds and highly encouraged them to withdraw and explore self-custody options. Now, what is crazy is I know that year on year, Paxful has actually been recording, you know, new highs when it comes to value of crypto traded or number of users and all of that. So again, I'm still not sure why they're shutting down. Now, Ray Youssef says departure of certain key officials, but I feel like Paxful is that high up in the ladder enough on the industry to get replacements. I mean, good replacements. So again, I feel like there is more to this story than we know. We don't know why they're shutting down yet, but I feel like over the course of the next couple of weeks, we might probably have an official statement explaining to the general public, or at least to all the dearly beloved users of Paxful, why they are leaving or exiting the crypto market. But for right now, I'm still very stunned. I'm a huge fan of Paxful, and I just don't know what to make of this, but that's okay. Anyway, moving on to the next headline. Africa-centered blockchain startups graduate from the Ariob incubation program.
On April 4th, Ariob, which is an incubation program aimed at launching Africa-centered startups into blockchain ventures, graduated its very first cohort. The program is a collaboration between decentralized technology solutions provider Input Output and Ethiopian tech incubator and accelerator ISADIS. The first cohort of 80 early stage ventures worked on sectors like health, savings, and money transfer, and represented roughly about 8 countries. Over the course of 6 months, the startups received professional business consulting, training, business, and market linkage opportunities. The incubation program now provides the startups with the exposure they need to attract investment, commercialization, and tokenomics support, which are very key in bringing the startups to their next level. It was my first time coming across Ariob, but I always think any sort of incubation or program that, you know, perhaps exposes people to certain ways of doing things and maybe even teaches them about, you know, best practices, etc., throughout the industry and throughout business, particularly global business. I always think it's a good idea. It's a phenomenal idea. So I would really, really like to see what this first cohort has produced, what these businesses and these startups are going to be. It is a very exciting time to see a lot of startups coming through. And, you know, come bear, come bull, a lot of people are just continuing to churn out products and apps and innovations and everything in between. And it's quite humbling to see, and it's very innovative. And I'm truly honored to be able to see it all as it happens. On to our next headline for this week, the DFS Lab and Stella join forces to launch a new fund.
Again, first of all, I'll say that it always brings so much joy to my heart to see, you know, more and more collaborations between indigenous African organizations in the blockchain space and, you know, the larger ones in the West, for instance, Stella. Now, DFS Lab is an early stage investor in Africa, and the Stella Development Foundation have reached the DFS Lab Stella Africa Fund 1 to support promising entrepreneurs and teams in Africa who seek to revolutionize the digital payments industry by leveraging the capabilities of the Stella blockchain network. The initiative is looking to back pre-seed and seed teams, building products with a variety of use cases that can leverage the Stella network, especially those solving for fiat crypto ramps and those building cross-border payment services for the continent. The DFS Lab portfolio is said to already include a wide range of startup companies in Africa. Again, you know, nearly every time we talk about finance or about money, we always have to talk about cross-border payments. And that's because it's such a huge pain to make those kinds of transactions. It's a lot. And it really hampers commerce, knowing that you really want to get something, or you really have to pay for something, or you really need to, you know, make a certain transaction. But because that good or service is not available in your country, then it becomes nearly impossible for you to pay for it because of the many regulations and many restrictions that come with you having to make an international transfer. But again, I am always strongly rooting for, you know, these new and upcoming cross-border payment services, you know, fiat and crypto ramps. I feel like they're definitely taking us, which each new one that comes up, they're taking us one step closer towards the goal of, you know, a borderless financial system where everybody can do anything they want almost instantly without fear of, you know, kickbacks or any of the sorts. So I feel like this is great, and I'm rooting for Stella and DFS, and we're definitely looking forward to seeing more collaborations between indigenous African organizations in the blockchain space and, you know, the big ones like Stella or Cardano or any of the others. And moving on to the next headline, which is quite interesting. Nigerian property tech startup House Africa secures $400,000 in funding.
House Africa is the firm behind Sitemap, which is a platform that deploys both map and blockchain technology to enable first-time buyers to select, verify, and pay for estate plots all online. Sitemap's proprietary blockchain supports a secure land registry and, together with their map, digitizes sitemaps for real estate projects. House Africa plans to use the funds to further develop its technology, expand its user base, and increase its workforce. Over 100 real estate companies are already using the platform, which simplifies the buying and payment processes for properties. The firm's CEO, Namdi Uba, has said that their solution enables buyers to make informed decisions when buying land and increases transparency and value, which can inspire government land registries to follow suit. I think this is phenomenal. I know jokingly a lot of people will say, yeah, pretty soon we'll get to buy land, you know, via blockchain, but it's here. And this isn't just, oh, I'm buying, you know, some digital land that isn't really real. It's not tied to anything physical. This is actually connecting it to physical land and everything of the sort. So this is a phenomenal innovation to see, a great, you know, fork or the use of blockchain technology and what it stands for and what it's about to offer transparency and ease of access. Because access above all things for me, I always believe that the minute you give people access to certain opportunities or access to perhaps using a particular platform in a certain way that hasn't quite been built for them, you change their entire lives. Because this saves you so much time. It saves you from having to stand in long lines at certain offices and whatever else to try to talk to one specific person, but instead you can do it all online. It can also, you know, make your entire experience more enjoyable and perhaps encourage you to do more of it, and maybe even encourage more people to invest in property. That's potential. You never know. Anything is possible at this point. And with that, we have our final headline for this week. South African professor speculates that the US is trying to, and his words, not mine, assassinate crypto.
You know, first of all, I'll say that if I thought any country would be championing the use of crypto, I mean, given the fact that the US is, you know, world power and that they're, in most cases, at the forefront of new and innovative technology, I would say by right now, I would have been expecting the US to be actively making, you know, decisions and policies that are pro-crypto. But right now, it just looks like there's a lot of ruckus with the SEC and, you know, to have senators calling for the regulation of crypto and all of that. And it just makes it very hard for, you know, users in the US or even around the world to like get in line with crypto, especially in the USA. African professor of practice at the University of Johannesburg and co-author of the book Beyond Bitcoin, Decentralized Finance and the End of Banks, Stephen Boyke Sidley, has accused the US regulators of, in quote, assassinating crypto through coordinated and possibly illegal efforts. Now, according to Sidley, these efforts are unlikely to succeed because crypto is global and many formerly US-based companies and innovators have fled the country to set up bases in countries with more comfortable regulatory environments. In an op-ed published by the Daily Maverick, Sidley pointed how the US regulators have been working against the crypto industry. He cited the example of Custodia Bank, whose founder, Caitlin Long, was committed to reducing risks and boosting depositors' confidence in crypto exchanges. Still, the Federal Reserve denied the bank's application for a national banking license without any clear explanation. Now, Sidley believes that this is a part of the US government's sinister agenda against cryptocurrencies. And he also highlighted how US regulators have seemingly coordinated their actions against crypto entities. Sidley says that these moves are illegal and immoral, given the current banking crisis triggered by banking failures in the United States. Now, despite the ongoing regulatory crackdown, Sidley insisted that opponents of crypto, like US Senator Elizabeth Warren, are unlikely to get their way because crypto is global. According to Sidley, many companies, developers, and innovators have moved from the United States to countries like Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore, and Switzerland, where the regulatory environment is more comfortable. I mean, for one, I'm going to have to pick on the issue of, you know, the U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren. And I saw that tweet, I saw the headlines, and she's pretty much basing a bulk of our campaign on, you know, and through crypto forums, you know, trying to tell people that crypto is everything that is wrong with the American financial system and it has to be stopped. But now the truth is, they say these things, but I'm not exactly sure how they entirely have proof to show that crypto is all that is wrong. Or maybe it's a personal vendetta. There has to be something beyond the ordinary that might have happened to any of these people to make them want to discredit crypto so much. And again, I feel like the industry at this point is, like I would say, too big to fail, because we already have billions of people using cryptocurrency all over the world. Like, how many of these people are you going to onboard? How many of these systems are you going to try and disrupt? How many of this infrastructure are you going to try to pull down? So I see it pretty much as, you know, throwing efforts into the wind, trying to pull down a structure that has existed for this long, you know, and has endured for this long, despite everything, despite the ups and the downs. And I feel like it's pretty much high time that regulators all over the world and governments and everybody else start coming to terms with the fact that cryptocurrency is not going away anytime soon. Nobody's going to kick of blockchain technology from the face of the earth. It's something that is here to stay for, I don't know, the foreseeable future. I was going to say forever, but well, I don't know how long forever is. So I'm going to say for the foreseeable future. But I feel like all of this sinister agenda, trying to discourage people from using crypto, trying to say cryptocurrency is bad, you know, trying to discredit the use of stable coins and all of that. Every working system has its ups and downs. No system is perfect, you know. So the fact that the blockchain industry has experienced quite a lot of upturns and downturns still doesn't make it horrible. I mean, we have downturns and upturns everywhere. I mean, recently we've seen that in the US banking sector, and well, nobody's trying to talk about it. I mean, not as much as they are trying to discredit crypto. So are they going to say that they would be willing to scrap the entire banking industry just because a couple of banks failed? You know, that is something we should really all reflect on. I mean, it's change is good, especially when it's change that could, you know, transform lives, transform our future, and, you know, helps the bulk of people, you know, live easier lives, do things more seamlessly. But the fact that people see this kind of change, and because they are very unwilling to move away from the old and transit to the new, and they think it's horrible, then I really don't subscribe to that. Not at all. I do not.
I'd like to close that by saying change may be good, but let's also remember that change will never be welcomed by the people who have been making a killing from the old systems and the way that things have always been. So if you're going to come in with something new and it changes everything for them, you know, maybe drains a bit more funds from their pockets, they maybe won't like it too much, especially when you, you know, give freedom back to the people. But with that, just a reminder that none of what we've shared here is financial advice, only the opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. And if you haven't already, please be sure to subscribe and leave a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. If you are listening via Spotify, please also check that you can be able to leave a comment there to just maybe let us know how you thought about this particular episode, what you'd like to hear more of or maybe less of. We're always open to everything positive, you know, constructive criticism is welcome here. So until next time, remember to be relentless in your mission to be bankless.